Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Vegas studios, it is Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, ready to give you a little quick glimpse into things that have caught my eye, my take on some of the nerdtastic stories going along in the Geekverse. Also, today, we will have an interview with a local author, Ian Breeze Cannon. Breeze, I think is his, if I'm not mutilating your name, I just don't care. Ian and I go a ways back, but he's coming on the podcast today to talk about his projects that he's got out there, some of the fantastic science fiction novels that he has written. So we will have Ian on shortly. But before we do, let's dive into what's going on across the nerd sphere as it is. And before we do that, let's talk about our sponsor, Suzy Q's, who will be at the All Seas Fan Expo this weekend. She'll be set up with PJ Pop Culture right next to my table, who will have Red returning to the con scene as well. It seems like it has been a small lifetime since any of us have graced a table in a convention. So We finally get to get together and do what we do best, and that's just sit at a con and drink. No, we'll be busy. There's a ton of guests that will be appearing at the All Seas Expo. Pardon me as I try to drink and talk at the same time. It usually doesn't work out well. Pardon me. Oi. So, we will be there. There are lots of guests. If you haven't gone to check out the webpage yet for All Seas Fan Expo, please do. There will be a lot of things to do. Vendors, Beckett's Grading Service will be there, in addition to, of course, us, the masters of podcasting, 5280 Geek, PJ and myself, and we'll be doing all sorts of kinds of nonsense. And it is free, which is the best kind of price for any kind of nerd gathering. And you really don't have an excuse, because I don't think there's a whole lot going on this weekend. It's really hard to say nowadays. So come and see Susie, come and see Red, come and see myself. We will have some stuff. I've got a few items that I'm going to throw up for sale out of the vault. And PJ, of course, is separating with something he's probably going to complain about later. So we'll look at that and point and laugh. What's going on is very interesting news as we dive in this week with my, I'm not surprised kind of take on this, but I am surprised, especially when you realize that if you're going to spend $200 million on a project, I think you kind of want to see it through and see some kind of payoff. Unfortunately, Netflix has decided to cancel Jupiter's Legacy, and, it's kind of not even like cancel it. It's very strange and how they went about doing this. They decided not to renew the contracts for any of the actors involved in the project. So just kind of, I wouldn't say a big F you to everybody, but definitely just decided to say, okay, we're not moving forward with this project at this time. So Josh Duhamel, who is Utopian in the show, kind of said, okay, well, maybe Hulu's looking for a new series, and just kind of, you know, took it on the chin and moved forward. There is rumors about them using another Mark Millar story, which is Super Crooks, and to be honest with you, when they said they were going to do Jupiter's Legacy, I was surprised, and I didn't think it would be that big of a hit. I was hooked. I wanted to see more, and I did like how they kind of did this mashup of the different comics and pulling from different stories to make this one a longer, cohesive, kind of better-flowing story for television. And I liked what they did. I liked the approach, and I liked the characters. But to be honest with you, it's not, I don't think it's like one of Mark's bigger and well-known comics. And I don't know if Super Crooks is going to be any different, but it's still in the Jupiter's Legacy universe. And to be honest with you, I think Netflix is missing the mark. I really think that they... if you're going to do a Mark Millar comic book story, look at Wanted. Now, I know the film, as it was with Angelina Jolie, was kind of meh. It took some of the key components from the story to develop this new world and all of that. But the whole premise behind Wanted is the villains win. They wipe out all the good guys, and now they're running the show. And it's really a much deeper, darker story than we get for the film. So I honestly think if they're trying to compete with The Boys, if they're trying to compete with Invincible, then this is the wrong course of action. This isn't the way you go. So with Wanted, I think it kind of fits more into the vein, and I think the characters are a lot more provocative than we're going to see for Super Crooks. And maybe we'll get that further down the line. Maybe they're waiting for naming rights. I honestly don't know. Maybe Wanted's not available at this time. So just as a filler? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we even see like a Hit Girl series or something along those lines to kind of just fill in. I think they're just trying to keep Mark on the hook because he is a great writer. He does some amazing work, and his characters are definitely larger than life. I'm just kind of sad because I was really looking forward to the continuation of the story, especially when you look at the cliffhanger ending that we get with the end of this, and it's such a rub that you're like, oh, screw you, you bastard, you know? You were emotional at the end of it. And like I said, when I did my take on it not that long ago, I wasn't upset with it, but I wasn't like completely enthralled with it. Especially when you look at like something like Shadow and Bone, which did get renewed for a second season, and the character development and all of that, I kind of was more invested and kind of got hooked on that. Red, of course, has told me that you don't want to read the books that these are based off of, that the TV show is far more entertaining and engaging than the books. So I have to take her at a word. We'll probably have her on shortly within the next couple of weeks, months. Depends. She's knee-deep in writing and getting ready for the con. So when she comes on, that will be one of the things. She also has this very unique theory that she was explaining to me just the other day. It was kind of funny, and I'm not going to spoil it by explaining it poorly, because that's what will end up happening if I try to do this. But we will get Red on so she can explain this outlandish idea of her theory on something comic book oriented, no less. Which in and of itself was kind of a surprise. I was like, really? You're telling me about comic stuff? So she was proud of herself. And rightfully so. This is some solid nerd-tastic stuff. So, Jupiter's Legacy, will we see it again? I don't think so. I honestly don't see these actors coming back unless Netflix throws an obscene amount of money at them. But then you're already, you know, $200 million in the hole. So, cut your losses and move on. I don't understand what in Netflix's mind is a hit. What is a success to Netflix is a mystery at this point. So, because I know a lot of people that weren't as impressed with Smoke and Bone as I was, and I guess I don't know. It's a very interesting dilemma, and one we probably won't get answers to, especially when you think Jupiter's Legacy would have probably been another, you know, year and a half of production to get back to the characters. Who knows? But I'm sure we won't have to wait long to see any of those, because I know Dramel has already got a couple of other movies and projects going on. I'm not sure about Leslie Bibb, who is Utopian's wife. I know she pops up in some very interesting projects. I don't think she's going to show up in Marvel anytime soon, now that Iron Man and all that's done, but she's married to freaking Sam Rockwell, so I don't think she's hurting for projects or things to do. Just a hunch. What else? And speaking of the boys, oh my God. So this week we see Jensen Ackles, of course, from Supernatural fame, completely suited up for Soldier Boy for The Boys season 3. And I'm ecstatic by this. The whole costume, the look is exactly what they're doing for The Boys, and bringing that from the pages of the comic books and just bringing this to life has been just one freaking great ride. I'm loving it. And what they're doing is spectacular. I can't wait for season 3. I'm curious to see what they do with Soldier Boy, because he's a screwed up cookie. He's one messed up guy. And I don't want to give any spoilers. And what I may tell you may not even be the character that we see for the show. So no spoilers, no foreshadowing, no any of that. Go and check out Jensen Ackles' page, because I know it's up there. And I think it was on YouTube. They're just kind of, you know, welcome to the boys. And it's hilarious. Homelander's doing his special kind of cheesiness, because you got to love the Homelander. So he's giving him a cheesy little nod, and it's great. I'm absolutely loving it. But other than that, there's not a whole lot else to report on The Boys. I know that they're working. I know that they're filming. Hopefully we'll see more of behind the scenes, get a trailer here soon, just something to whet the appetite for The Boys season 3. But Jensen Ackles looks spectacular. The other big story, and I don't want to get too much into this because it's still relatively new to this week's release, and I don't want to spoil anything on it, just from the standpoint of how this is intense. Sweet Tooth by Jeff Lemire was a Vertigo title for DC, and for it to come to Netflix was a surprise. I never thought it would be adapted for a TV show, but of course Robert Downey Jr. and his wife as the production team get a hold of it and take full opportunity of getting this story out there. And it is, I don't want to say it's like heavy, but it is very, very emotionally driven story. And the show is just, whoa, it is heavy, and it is great. I couldn't imagine sitting binging this for obvious reasons, because there's just so much to disseminate, and there's a lot going on. And like I said, I don't want to give any spoilers out there, and I only think it's 8 episodes. But to binge all 8 episodes, I think you're just going to be like an emotional wreck at the end of it. So this is a show that I'm actually curious to see if Netflix will continue, because I don't know if we'll see more to it, or if it's going to it's kind of like one of those weird off-ball comic series, because with it coming out of Vertigo, which I think was the stronger line for DC when it came to original stories, and you know, kind of what Image ended up aspiring to with producing, you know, some quality stories that aren't necessarily driven by capes, and some compelling stuff with some great artwork. Of course, Sandman came out of there, Hellblazer with John Constantine, and all of that. So it's I didn't think it would be as popular, and to turn it into a show again just shows the faith that everyone has in Jeff as a writer. And I'm just blown away with what Netflix has actually put up on the screen for this. So I know if you're kind of curious and wondering, scratching your head, where this story came from, if you go back and look into Vertigo, I think it's available in trade. It's hard to say, especially with what's going on over in DC's world, if they've been sold or if the ink's dried on that deal, which I haven't talked about because I'm waiting to see how all that shakes out before I talk about it. But if you can find, I know you're not going to find the issues, just because now that it's a hit on Netflix, I don't think you're gonna come across the issues in the wild as you would have before. But the trade paperbacks might be out there, and it is worth a read. It is very compelling and intriguing story, and I don't want to, like I said, no spoilers, no giveaways. I'll give it another week or two before I give you my complete take on this. But I want to stop and take notice of just how impressive this is. And I applaud just the endeavor. It's just awesome. So good. Moving along to movie news that's caught my eye. Matrix 4, all of a sudden, out of the blue, has signed Christina Ricci to the project. So I'm kind of like, okay, so now we have like Neil Patrick Harris and Christina Ricci. And I think Lizzie Borden is, or not Lizzie Borden. I'm trying to think, what was Christina Ricci's last project? Yeah, she was in the Lizzie Borden story. So that I think was her last project that I remember seeing her in. And I love Christina Ricci. And I know everyone's been going back and forth of, whether or not she's going to be in the new Addams Family, what all that's going to look like. Does she play Morticia? Does she play a grown-up Wednesday? That still has yet to flush itself out. However, with already Keanu Reeves, Carrie-Anne Moss, and Jada Pinkett Smith returning, and I'm really curious to see what we're going to get, especially with Neil Patrick Harris now and Christina Ricci. Holy crap. Now, unfortunately, the Matrix 4 still does not have an official title, and will release simultaneously in the theaters and on HBO Max on December 22nd. So I'm surprised at how fast they're moving with this project, and I'm sure they probably have like the principal filming done, and it's now down to like the special effects and the editing process. But I'm still, I don't, I'm on the fence. I really don't know if I care. Matrix, I mean, I'm kind of siding with Red on this, and just, I don't care. The Matrix was done. It's over. It ended satisfactorily. I don't really like how it ended, and the 15-minute death scene with Carrie-Anne Moss at the end really annoyed the fuck out of me, but for all intents and purposes, it's over. It's done. The Matrix. It's closed. It rebooted. It's over. So to revisit it, sure, I guess. But it just kind of goes to show you that some things refuse to go away. So we'll get more details. I don't know what role that Christina Ricci is going to play. I'm thinking one of the baddies, maybe someone to replace Agent Smith. I could see her as a villain. That would be cool. I don't know if it's Neil Patrick Harris is just too sarcastic to be a villain in The Matrix. But Christina Ricci, oh yeah, I could just totally see it. But we're going to have so much going on from, you know, our boy Keanu, especially when just recently announced Donnie Yen is joining the John Wick 4 cast. And, John Wick 4, which doesn't have a title yet. And now we have Donnie Yen joining this. Now, supposedly, Donnie Yen is a friend to Keanu Reeves' character and will be, I guess, lending a hand with the next installment. I'm over the moon because I love Ip Man, the four films that he did for that, and of course the absolute great scene he does in Star Wars Rogue One, my favorite to date. It really, yes, so good. I mean, I really did like Donnie, and of course, like, now this stretches back when you had like he showing up in Highlander Final Dimension with Duncan and Connor finally closing out the Highlander series, and he does quite the interesting face-off with Duncan. So, there's always a warm spot, but Donnie Yen is just freaking brilliant, and to add him to the John Wick series, I think will be perfect. So because he was the blind guardian on Rogue One. So I can't remember the name of the planet. It got blowed up. That's all that matters. He'd go pop. But I don't know how much more Keanu Reeves can put out there. I mean, the man's just ridiculously busy, ridiculously rich, and ridiculously just like everything. So No rest, I suppose. Sure, works good. What else? What else? Don't forget, this week, Wednesday, actually, we get Loki, the final streaming service series from Disney. So pumped for this. I was more excited about this one than the other two. And now, since those two were so good with, you know, what we saw from Winter Soldier and the Falcon and WandaVision, my expectations are huge. So we get, hopefully Disney will do what they've been doing and give us a couple of episodes instead of just like one. I guess at least two. I think they're still doing the eight episodes, which I'm a little bit annoyed with. I want more story, of course. Everybody does. And this of the main point to this is it's a direct shoot off from Infinity War and everything that happened from that. So hopefully we'll get some answers. So I'm sure there's going to be fallout from everything. And who will we see? Will there be surprise guests? Will there be something? I can't wait. I can only speculate at this point. And now just wait one day. That's all you got to do. Just wait a day. And you'll be able to watch it. Final bit of news. Lock and Key, speaking of streaming shows that got renewed, they're saying that the series will premiere in October. They haven't given a solid date in October, but that it is returning. There are some images of the next season online if you want to check them out. But they're just saying expect in October. Lock and Key has already been renewed for season 3, and that happened back in December. So we hadn't even seen this current season just to have, you know, season 3 already greenlit. And then it absolutely makes perfect sense. This is one of my favorite storylines. This is a great comic, and I'm absolutely in love with what they did. So we'll see how the story progresses. And even just the stills that they're showing from season 2 look to be amazing. We even get to see, another Key. Yeah, I can't. No spoilers. Go online, check it out. I'd post the pictures, but I'm going to be busy because Ian is here, and we will sit down with Ian here right now, and we'll do a little quick chat and see what's going on with him. We have another artist spotlight. Last week we had Matt Campbell. This week, staying within the creator's realm, we have Ian Breeze Cannon.
Brazy Cannon.
Brazy.
Brazy.
You know, it's not a podcast unless I mutilate your name somehow.
That's okay.
And for those at home that do not know of Ian, what's wrong with you? He is a literary genius, a man of many talents, creating science fiction worlds beyond your imagination. It's a little too thick. Yeah, it's a little thick. Yeah.
I'll take it, though.
Well, you got to have, like, a flashy intro. Everyone that's been on the show, we give them kind of a little, you know.
I'm not complaining.
You can use that in the future if you like. I'll just give that to you.
That works.
That's all yours. Ian, actually, and I go back quite a ways. We've been doing cons together for ages.
It seemed like it.
Ages and ages. Always waving, always saying hi. Ian would sit up by the table and give his 2 cents, and I would take it because the man has got a certain perspective that I appreciate because his grasp on science fiction is quite immense. Because you have been doing cons for how many years now?
Well, technically, since I was a kid, I grew up with this all. So the first convention I remember was the WorldCon out here in Denver way back in, 82?
Yeah.
I remember that one. I was, 7, 8? I remember primarily the Dark Crystal display. They had all the costumes and the storyboard all over the walls. So that just stuck in my head. And that in the dealer's room were the two things I remember from it.
Dealer's room was pretty impressive.
But,
was I here in 82? I think I was here in 82. Yeah, because I was here for the snowstorm.
Yeah, so that was the first convention I went to. Then, you know, as a kid, it wasn't a big thing. As a teenager, I started going to Mile High Con regularly for the gaming.
Yeah.
Then as I became more interested in being a writer, I went to learn how to write and started attending the writing panels. Then once I actually became a writer, I started going to, as a panelist, You know, so I've evolved throughout all the levels.
It's a circle of life, yeah. As it were. Now, because you also do your cosplay, because the big thing for Ian and I, of course, is Starfest. That is like our big anchor together. And, of course, Denver Comic Con and Mile High Con and all of it. But I think we have the most fun at Starfest.
Starfest is definitely fun with the social aspects. I mean, you know everyone.
Yes.
You walk 5 feet and you have to give someone a hug.
Yeah. I don't get very far in Starfest at all.
You can't escape that.
Red gets pissed. She's all like, can you just not talk to somebody? I'm like, I can't. It's rude. Yeah.
No, that's one thing about that's cons in general. You develop these con families, mm-hmm. and they're just so awesome to just go and hang out with these people again for a weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really has an impact to you, especially, you know, we haven't done them in a year and a half now.
It's been a small lifetime since any of us have been in a con. What is going to be your first con? I mean,
I'm going to have a half table in Author's Alley at WhimsyCon here at the end of September.
Right. WhimsyCon's coming back?
Yep.
Wow.
End of September. Then the next week, I'm doing two cons in a row. Is Mile High Con.
Yes.
So last week in September, WhimsyCon. First week in October, Mile High Con.
Wow.
And I'm going to be at both of them.
Okay.
I'm hoping to get a table at Artist Alley with Rocky Mountain Con. They just started doing vendor tables, and they haven't gotten around doing the Artist Alley yet.
He's working on it. I talk to Tim every week, so Tim's on top of it. He's working on it.
So I'm hoping to be there. Those are the. I know NDK is supposed to be happening this year, but
NDK is happening this year.
Yeah, that's not one I've ever attended. My youngest son is into anime big time. It's much more of a convention for him.
Right.
But I think those are the only conventions I know that are definitely happening.
Well, and you don't strike me as the anime style as you're sporting the Marvel heavy T-shirt today.
I like anime just fine. In fact, I love bragging to my son. It's like, I'm the OG anime. I remember Robotech, the original Voltron, Star Blazers, G-Force. I remember all that stuff.
G-Force was good. I miss G-Force. I always the bird guy, you know, and Hunk was no Hunk's out of
Hunk's Voltron, but they almost had the exact same five characters.
It was, and everyone was just kind of like plug and play.
Yeah,
because I think Keith was like every
yeah, oh yeah,
it was in every show. It's like goddamn
it, that was your stereotypical leader of every futuristic anime.
Yeah. It really was. The one that I – and then when you go into, like, hardcore anime, of course, you've got Akira. My favorite, and I don't usually talk about it, is Bubblegum Crisis.
Okay.
Because nobody –
not watched it.
No, exactly. Nobody knows Bubblegum Crisis with Pris and the whole battle armor suits, and it's very cool.
Well, there's so much out there now. That's a crazy thing is just how much – I mean, I can't believe anyone can keep up with it. My son seems to be able to.
Well, he's got the time.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, he's probably like when we were, you know, we were waiting for the next installments. Now it's like, I don't even know where the hell to start.
Yeah.
Some of it looks like garbage, and I'm like, I don't have time. An anime about cooking. I don't.
We've watched a few with him. It is, it's one of those things. Watch it and see what you think, because it's not bad and it has a charm to it.
Right.
But it's so out there.
It strikes me as that, because I remember I would watch Ranma One Half, and they later in the show introduced a chef, and she would run around with a peel as like her weapon and just like whoop people up on it. And this is like later into the series, just before the artist left to go do... I can't think of the name. Naruto? Was it Naruto that he ended up doing? Anyway, so he left Ranma and went on to other things, and I was just like, no more Ranma. But yeah, there's like this chef coming out with a giant peel just beating the crap out of people. It was just great. But, you know, hey, things change, times change. What was your big read, Ian? What did you like reading, or what would you do?
Well, I remember being into Pierce Anthony Xanth.
Right.
When I was young. I read a few of his more recent ones, and it's like, okay, yeah, I can't, you know. But that was one thing that I definitely started on, I would say, is the Xanth series. Robert Hyland was, my dad definitely was like, here, pushing that. It's like, okay, oh, these are good.
Right.
You know, the first book I read in one day was Orphans of the Sky by Hyland.
Oh, yeah. Great book.
But that's, like I said, first book I read in one day. Most of the other time, you take your time.
I've never found a real purpose to that. And unless I get to the final end and you're like, oh, I don't want to read the last chapter.
A lot of random stuff back then. One thing I've always liked, Mark Twain.
Okay.
Tom Sawyer, Huck Finn. Those books, I don't know what it was, but those definitely do me in. The stories.
Right.
Something about them have always stuck with me. Since then, some of my more recent influence, Neil Gaiman.
It's kind of hard not to really see how much of an impact Gaiman has had, not only on the literary world, but like the comic book world. Yeah. And I mean, I think even Stan Lee referred to him as the keeper of the faith now, basically, for the lore.
He's definitely become a very Stan Lee-like figure.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Neverwhere is one book I've not gotten tired of. I've read it 3 or 4 times now. And every time, it is enjoyable. It is it's a well-written story. It's one you really get into.
Well, it's hard not to, because you have Dor, who has this ability to go basically anywhere. The Marquis, who I think is probably one of the best designed characters in any of Neil Gaiman's lores out there. Mm-hmm. I honestly think Neverwhere is better than American Gods. Mm-hmm. I Neverwhere a lot more.
And of course, Neil Gaiman got to cheat a bit with that, because he did the BBC series first.
He did.
Then the novel after that, so he could see. It's like, okay, what worked, what didn't? I can improve that.
Yep.
So he did get to cheat a bit, but...
He did. And I do have that, actually. I think I have VHS.
I have it on DVD.
Do you?
Yeah.
I think I've got mine on VHS. I don't think I've ever...
It's very enjoyable to watch.
It is. There's a little... It's a little draggy in some spots. Especially when you get, like, the intros into the beginning of the episode, and it's just kind of like, oh, this is so hokey. Even Doctor Who isn't this hokey. Come on.
But, yeah, no, so... another present, Lois McMaster Blizzard.
I have no idea who that is.
The main thing she's known for is the Vorkosigan series.
Okay.
Really good space opera. Miles Vorkosigan, oh my God, he is like one of the greatest literary characters I've ever encountered. If you've not read any of her Vorkosigan stuff, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
It starts with his mother and the conditions of his birth. Then it goes into him. And one of the stories that stuck out to me more so than any of them is one of the Sorter stories from Borders of Infinity, I believe, which are like a collection. He's at the doctor's office going through his injuries with the doctor and explaining where some of the stuff comes from and why he's in bad condition. He was due to attempts on his life before he was born. He was born with really brittle bones and stunted growth and stuff.
Well, so it sounds like an M. Night Shyamalan character already. Sounds like Mr. Glass.
I'm way more interested in Mr. Glass. I'm sorry, Miles. It's hard to explain Miles unless you read him. But so,
right.
One of the stories has Miles being caught in a war prison kind of thing, and
the POW camp.
Yeah, POW camp, and they're really mistreating everyone there. Miles starts off getting stripped naked, bullied around, and everything else. By the end of the story, he's basically taking control of things very subtly. It's not like he forced his way into it.
Right.
But he very subtly gets things organized, and so a bit of a spoiler, at the end of the story, he has everyone trained to be ready to be rescued when the people that he knew were coming show up to take things down. It's like, okay, everyone, the way we were doing it, that's how you get onto your ships and get out of here.
Wow. Okay.
And like I said, it started with this short character.
Right.
Naked in a POW camp.
Naked and afraid in space.
With no allies or anything.
in a POW camp.
So, no. I highly recommend her if you haven't read it. She has 3 main series she's known for. The Vorkosigans, A Curse of Chilean, which is really good fantasy with one of the best religions I've ever seen. I have the 5 gods. The Mother, the Father, the Son, the Daughter, and the Bastard.
Oh, wow.
And some of the faiths don't necessarily believe in the bastard. But you have this...
How can you not believe in the bastard? I mean, that one seems more legit than the rest of them.
But there's a whole ceremony of when you die, what god takes you up and accepts you kind of thing.
Wow.
It really gets elaborate with that, and the gods' influence and how they make saints and stuff within the world. Regretfully, she only did three books, and I think originally she was supposed to do one for each god kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But never completed that one. Then
Is she still writing?
Yeah, she's still writing.
She just hasn't gone back to it.
Right. She mainly seems to be still doing Vercursigen stuff. And
it sounds very Terry Pratchett to me with the gods. And I can just imagine, you know, like a Hitchhiker's Guide style.
Yeah, she's a great writer, but she doesn't quite have the humor at that level.
Gotcha.
Regretfully. And then the other one she does is called The Sharing Knife, which was brilliantly done. Not quite as elaborate as some, but it deals with issues of, like, tribalism. You have these one people that practice magic and the normal folk and the issues between the two of them and stuff.
And Muggles versus wizards.
Yeah, to some degree.
Wow.
But very well done. Okay. You know, I recommend all of her stuff. She's a brilliant writer, but definitely, you know, look at her stuff. That's influenced me to, you know, it's something I was into and looking like, you know, her word usage.
Right.
But both her and Gaiman, to me, are ones that, if you look at their writing, they can say so much with so little.
It's true.
They don't need to go into these elaborate descriptions.
So, like Stephen King is
I've actually only
Dean Koontz, maybe?
Yeah, I've only read one Stephen King novel.
Wow.
And that is Firestarter. The size scared me off.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but right. It's like, no, I need to read one. Got a hold of Firestarter. I remember I enjoyed the movie.
Right.
Always have had a crush on Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's the Drew Barrymore connection, wasn't
you know,
it?
I'm about the same age as her and everything, so it's, you know, very fitting.
Okay.
But so that was when I could get a hold of a copy. It's like, okay, I'll read that one. It's not a huge one or anything. And, you know, I was impressed. I had read a few of his short stories, though, because
Late Shift?
Can't remember which one. Shows how we can. Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, Shawshank? That's actually an impressive ass book. That's
well, no, it was a short story.
Or short story. Excuse me, I'm thinking of Green Mile. I apologize. But which is also an impressive ass fucking book. Yeah. I love that story. But yeah, Shawshank is very impactful.
So no, I haven't read much King. I have read a lot of Terry Pratchett. Not all. Quite a good
that man can
out
whip
there.
Out a book when he was around. I mean, Discworld is just so. Yeah. How did he keep track of all that shit? Is all I want
to
know.
It's a bit hard. Well, and that's one thing I'm learning with my stuff is
right.
trying to keep track of it all. So I actually went and created my own fan wiki for the George R. Martin's Place stuff, specifically so I can take my notes and make them more accessible. So it's like, okay, what are the character names I've used? Okay, I've used him. Who is he? Oh, okay.
That is absolutely a great idea because I know, I mean, interviewing authors in the past, you know, talking about their outlines and the book layout and everything, I haven't heard anyone create their own wiki page.
It was just an idea I had, like, I need to get my notes organized.
No, it's perfect, and it's there. You don't have to worry. Well, where did I put that damn note? Well, I'll just go online and look it up. I like that. That's creative, Ian. I like that a lot. So now, how did you get to this point? Because you weren't always a writer. You just all of a sudden just like, I'm gonna write.
I've always been creative.
Yes, that's true. Doctor Who. I've seen you doing cosplay at Denver Comic Con. You are, I would say, a very heavy science fiction geek.
My original career goals were writing and directing films.
Okay.
My degree is in film video technology.
Wow, all right.
But, of course, getting into the creative aspect of that is a lot harder.
Especially in Denver.
Yeah. You know, so I was doing tape room stuff, which is, it pays the bills, but running tape, the fun one was doing a year at Comcast where they were doing all the Discovery channels and doing Discovery Health.
Oh.
I could probably, honestly, if a woman went into labor, I could probably help her give birth fairly effectively.
Yeah.
I've seen enough birth programs now. It's in my head. But so, you know, that's what I was doing with that degree is tape room.
Well, yeah, because my internship was at Fox, and I was, of course, you're doing tape for sports. And some of the times I didn't care. My other friend, they ended up at Comcast, and they were doing, like, the commercials to make sure that the commercials were in place and everything was overlapping correctly. And I was like, that sounds better than me watching fucking sports clips all goddamn day.
Yeah. But so still wouldn't be creative and looking at a more realistic thing I could do. I started writing.
Right.
And needless to say, I've been writing. You know, looking back, I wish I had a notebook, because I know back in high school we had a weekly writing thing, and right. I wrote out almost
like
a full novel.
Wow.
That I know the story, and it's definitely one I want to rewrite, especially since it utilizes my oldest character. I have this character who I will openly admit is influenced by Doctor Who. I've been a huge Doctor Who fan since I can remember.
Yes.
So I of course create my own time traveling character who has influenced by definitely Doctor Who, but
he's not a Time Lord. He just travels in time.
He's a human that invented his form of time travel, and he's an adventurer. His name is Professor Gunn, and I actually got to include him in my second George Armand novel.
Oh.
He actually is now in published literature, finally.
Nice.
But he's been a character in my head for, you know, since, I think, grade school is when I invented him.
Wow.
And I flushed him out over the years. And so he has, in junior high school, I did really, really bad short films, because the technology then was not the cool technology we have now.
No.
If I could get a hold of a camera, I did cheesy films. But all the editing had to be in camera. You know, you couldn't download really cool free editing software to use on the digital stuff you can do with your phone. So, you know, these are really bad movies. Especially, I didn't know how to write scripts or anything. So a lot of it was improv. Like, okay, friends, this is the scene we're doing. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, you have these weird, awkward pauses as they try and figure out their lines.
How Goldberg of you. Because, I mean, it's I can just see you with, like, a high eight, you know, just sitting there trying that big old brick of a freaking camera trying to record things. But that's, you know, that's impressive. That's impressive, yeah. Still, you know,
and like, I did three films with Professor Gunn there and a bunch of other really cheesy stuff.
Then right.
Me and my friend Mike did the Ian and Mike show, which a few people compared to Wayne's World. So that was big at the time. And we were basically a bunch of stupid teenagers sitting down being stupid.
Okay.
The sketches were all like, hey, I got a concept for a sketch. Let's act it out. And we were, you know, just playing off each other is all it was. And we got some funny stuff, and we got some really stupid, idiotic stuff.
Do you still have the tapes?
Yeah. Actually, a few years ago, I converted them all to digital. And
smart man.
On my YouTube channel, you can find what I thought were our best sketches. I took them and put them up there. Well, one thing, my friend John had passed away real young.
Okay.
But he's in a lot of them.
Right.
So anytime I did one with him in it, you know,
it's kind of a tribute
to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But each one has a different kind of warning. The following has teenager boys being stupid teenage boys. If you think you might be offended by that kind of stuff, best not to watch.
This is not for you. Carry on.
So, yeah, so I've converted some of the Ian and Mike show sketches to put them up on YouTube. I haven't put any of the really bad movies up there yet. I'm not sure if I'm willing to.
Why not? I would. I mean, there are worse things out there on the internet. I mean,
that's true.
Some of the stuff that I've seen, and to be honest, you could probably upload them now that you have them digital into a timeline and add some effects. You could,
yeah,
you could do some post.
I thought about doing some editing.
You should.
Yeah, it's an idea, but of course now my boys are creative like me, and so one thing I've been enjoying doing is teach them how to do the stuff right, especially with all the modern technology. That, you know, so they have a lot of steps. I wish I, you know. The cameras are insanely better, and you can do it digitally, so you can take a million different takes and have them all.
Don't have to worry about film.
The editing software that comes on any standard computer is, you know, good, and you can get better for affordable prices as well.
Yeah, especially for, like, After Effects and crossfades and special stuff. Yeah.
And then, of course, I've taught them how to write a script. I've taught them, you know, how to tell a story. You know, I've been active with, okay, you know, think about this when you're doing it.
Right.
And especially my younger son, Hayden, every year for a few years though, during spring break, we do a short film with him.
Nice. That's impressive.
Yeah, originally the first one we did was a school project, because both my boys went to Jefferson County Open School, and their curriculum is very hands-on, very you pick your projects, you decide what you do to match this qualification to move up and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so one of the things he wanted to do was a short film. It's like, okay, I will, you know, be there every step of the way, but you
have
to
put
write
in the work.
It.
Right.
You have to, I will help you with directing it, camera angles, stuff like that. You know, I'll help you set it up. But the writing's all yours. The editing's all yours. I've edited films, and it's not the funnest thing.
No, it's not.
So it's like, I will teach you how to edit, but you're doing all the editing.
Yeah.
And he even did all the costuming, casting, everything, really, on that side of it. And so, you know, he did a film called The Greatest King in All of History. Comedy, really cheesy comedy. And every time we've ever shown it, we've gotten a great response, people laughing.
Sweet. Which,
if that's what you're trying for,
that's what you want.
That says you succeeded.
Very Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. So is it on YouTube? Are you, yes. Have you got it on your channel?
I think that all of his films are on his channel.
Okay.
But he has three or four. The last one we did had, regretfully, we only have so much time.
All right.
And it was a real windy week.
Oh.
So the sound is bad on the last one, but
that's always the hard part when audio gets wrecked, because it's like, well, that just shut that whole thing down the ass. No, I get that.
But so he already has, and beyond that, both my boys have been in short films that I've done for legitimate film contests,
right,
which are considered professional credits.
It's true.
So, you know, you do, if anything you do within, like, one of the 48-hour film projects,
I was just about to bring that up. Yep.
So both my boys now have professional credits to their name by being part of those.
Get three. They can apply for their SAG card. That'd be great. So where are you at now? Because you've gotten how many books out there?
I have two full-length novels, the two George Armand's Place novels.
Right.
Those are both full-length. I have, you can either call it a novella, or you can try and be more creative and call it a young adult novel.
YA is kind of where the money is these days.
Because YA, you can get away with a lot shorter than adult novels.
Yes.
So it's right under 40,000 words. So if you try adult-wise, you have to call it a novella. But if you know, it's written, I didn't purposely write it as a young adult, but it definitely, you know.
Kind of translates that way?
Yeah. It translates just fine. So I've often promoted it as a young adult. And that's The Cost of Leveling Up. So I have that out.
That's the most recent one, isn't it?
No, that one I is the oldest. The most recent one that I just put out, finished up about a month ago, got the editing and all that stuff done, and then officially got published less than 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Is George Enderman's Place Under Siege.
Okay.
And, you know, that was a year and a half in the making. Although the first book technically took about a decade to make, and I had a lot of false starts with it. A lot of times, start writing, oh, this doesn't feel right, okay.
Had a lot of false starts, but you get there in the end.
So, like I said, I give that over a decade before I actually got the finished project.
Wow.
And that, you know, you hear stories like that. Technically, I've written one other novel way back when.
Right.
And then I got involved with the writer's group, and one of the first things I realized with their criticism is I don't know how the hell to tell a story yet.
Oh.
So then I started.
That's kind of a key component.
Yeah. So that's when I started focusing on short fiction.
Right.
I said, okay, let's switch over. Let's do short fiction. Let's, you know, learn to tell a story in the, you know, the limits of short fiction. See what I can do there.
Right.
And so I, you know, that's why I started getting published in short fiction.
Okay.
And I have about, I won't say, 24 or so stories out there now.
Okay.
In various markets. So one thing that I have done is I've been collecting those myself and doing collections. Through Amazon of my short fiction.
Right.
So my own projects that I've published now, I'm at about a dozen, I think, on Amazon.
Wow, that's an achievement right there. So is it mostly self-publishing that you're doing?
No, yeah.
Okay.
I'm still submitting short stories and stuff out there.
Right.
But I'm looking at the market, and one of the things I've noticed, especially at my level,
right,
is even if, let's say, I got a publisher to pick up my novel,
right,
it's a couple years before it's going to see publication. And even then, unless I can build up a name for myself before that,
right,
I'm not going to get much in the way of promotions from them.
Well, and it's the publishing world has kind of changed. They're waiting to see the self-publishers who they basically are just cherry picking to see. Okay, so, this guy sucks. We want that one. And
And even one local editor was talking about possibly publishing me. Sent me a contract. And I read through the contract and looking like, okay, within this contract, you're asking me to tell you how I think we should promote myself. Isn't that why I would come to you, so that you could do that? What do I gain from giving you part of the profit for my books if you're busy trying to figure out the same thing I'm trying to figure out? So everything I saw, it's like I'm going to be doing the exact same battle.
Right.
But I'll have all sorts of limitations because, you know, the publisher is going to determine when it comes out. They're going to, if anything, try and edit it up, the way they feel it needs to sell best, and they're going to have a bit more power and control over that. It's like, okay, there's unless
you just kind of sign over your baby and just hope for the best.
So, yeah, that's why I decided with my novels, like, I'm going to go the self-publishing route. And I know many independent writers who self-publish who have made a living. They've created my uncle Jonathan is a great Jonathan Barese.
Yep,
he does military sci-fi. He has this niche. He has a following. He does really well. Although he's a much faster writer than I am, he puts out quite a bit. You know, I'm talking about me having a dozen projects. I don't know how many he has now, but he puts out 3 or 4
holy crap.
A year.
Jeez. Yeah. Does he ever get up from the desk? Because I know we've had Travis on a couple of times. In fact, he's got a new book coming up. We'll have him on soon. But, yeah, he's like that same kind of little niche, and he's getting traction and doing the self-publishing route. Do you think that this is the best way for authors now?
Honestly, yes. With the publishing on demand, in fact, I would be willing to bet anything within the next decade, the big publishers are going to switch over to publishing on demand. It just makes sense. You don't have to do a, you know, 10,000, 100,000, whatever.
Print run.
You can say, okay, you know, if a bookstore wants a dozen copies, they can order a dozen copies and get them delivered. But the print run thing is getting so outdated because it's limiting. And stuff like, okay, let's say with George Armand's Place Under Siege. My father found a typo. He sent me the typo. I got on, altered the documents, uploaded them. So here on out, that typo is gone. I don't have to wait for a new print one to correct the typo.
So there's a rare out there with a typo in it that it's the variant issue, if you will.
But yeah, so you have a lot more control, and you can react a lot quicker.
Okay.
With the print on demand stuff, but also profitability. I don't have to invest in hundreds of copies of
inventory,
print books.
Inventory, yeah.
I update my inventory as needed. Okay, I'll order a dozen fish. Oh, I'm having a big convention. Okay, I hope I can sell 15, 20. I'll up the what I'm getting in. But I don't have to hold on to big inventory. You know, it's cost effective. I can promote the way I want to. You know, I can go out there. I can do stuff like this.
All right.
You know, I contact my friends. Hey, do you have ways I can promote it? And so, you know, I'm not limited. And I very much think unless you get a publishing house, I'll give you a big bonus to start with.
Right.
I don't see the point in starting through the traditional publishing anymore.
I agree. I think it is kind of a dinosaur. We've seen it kind of happening in the comic book industry as far as very limited prints. And they're cutting way back as digital is kind of taking over. But I don't know. I mean, I see the point. But at the same point, I'm like leery thinking I do kind of enjoy going to the bookstore and just kind of just looking at the shelves and just kind of seeing the books.
But at the same time, the bookstores will evolve.
Yes, hopefully.
They have to.
Fingers crossed.
You know, the bookstores that have survived right now have evolved to deal with the digital market.
Yeah.
You know, so they know how to evolve.
Hopefully.
And that's the thing. If they can't evolve, they're going to fall behind, and someone's going to come and replace them.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, the mom and pop stores. I mean, you were a guest when I ran DASFA. Mm-hmm. You remember Broadway Book Mall.
Yep.
I would love to see places like that do a lot better. And they're the ones that know how to order independent titles.
Yes.
I mean, Nina and... great, I can't remember her husband's name. Two people I love and are awesome. I can't remember her name suddenly. Ah!
I can't remember.
But, they order independent local authors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a collection there of that because they know how to order them. So... they're ready to evolve if that's the next step.
I think it is the next step. We'll see. Have you decided about like doing digital? Is that also an option?
I do more ebook sales than I do print.
Really?
Yeah. Most of the stuff I have out there right now is ebook. I only have 3 print right now, and that is Cost of Leveling Up, Day at George Armand's Place, and George Armand's Place Under Siege.
Okay.
Everything else is only digital. A few of them I'm planning on doing into print,
right.
But it's actually a lot easier to do digital because you don't have to worry as much about making everything fit and page layout and stuff. Because
right.
Ebooks don't have to worry about that.
No, it automatically does it for you. It's very cheaty.
So you don't have to worry about it as much. It's much easier to do, and most of my stuff also is short fiction.
Okay.
So talking about George Roman's place, I have the two novels. On top of that, I have right now six vacation stories that are all short stories that are only available in ebook form right now. Once I get enough of them, I'll take them together and do a print version.
All right.
But it's one way. It's like, okay, I can write this story, get it out there, have a market, because I, weirdly enough, I have a small fan base for George Roman's.
I don't think there's anything weird about that. I mean, don't disparage it like that. Oddly enough, I have fans. They like my shit.
Yeah. So, you know, I have content coming out in the form of short stories.
Right.
And they seem to be enjoying it. I think they enjoy reading the characters.
They haven't sent any hate mail yet, have they?
Well, that's when you know you've made it.
Well, I guess that's true.
I actually kind of sit there waiting. It's like, come on, someone send me hate mail. I want to know that I made it. But yeah, no, so far it's been really good. All the feedback. In fact, one of the more interesting stories I have about creating a new fan.
Right.
So you know who Kevin J. Anderson is, of
Yes,
course.
I know Kevin.
He's
actually been on the show, and I did that panel with him for the Collected for
Boop.
Boop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I follow him on Facebook. He did a post about him and his grandchildren watching Godzilla versus Kong,
right,
with warning, you know, no spoilers. So I'm being a smartass, and I go and I do this comment about how Godzilla and Kong end up talking it out, and at the end they hug it all out, realizing that they have wasted so much of their life with their violent acts and stuff like that. And of course, Kevin J. Anderson goes back, hey, I said no spoilers. Well, this Chris, he lives in Texas. Shortly after that, contacted me and was like, oh, I saw your exchange with Kevin J. Anderson.
Right.
I saw you were a writer also. What kind of stuff do you write? I'm like, oh, okay. So I just told him about my writing and stuff. Oh, cool. Could you send me a few of your books? Okay.
Sure.
So, you know, did the whole PayPal thing, and I mailed him, because he wanted them autographed. That was the main thing. It's like,
okay.
You know, you can
I respect that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You give them through Amazon, but they wouldn't be autographed. Right? He went autographed first. I was like, that's fine. You want to send me money to buy my books?
Absolutely.
So, you know, first time I did it, I know other authors that do that, but that's the first time I've actually done that.
Okay.
Send it to him. I keep having exchanges with him. And, you know, it's just out of the blue. He just saw the exchange I did with Kevin J. Anderson, who he was a fan of. Like, oh, another writer who has a connection to Anderson. Okay, I'll see what he's like.
And Anderson is local. So, yeah. I mean, running into Kevin is not that difficult, but sometimes he doesn't like pop up when you think he's going to. I ran into him like more times traveling than I ever thought I would. We were going to C2E2. Him and his wife are like sitting a couple seats behind me, and I'm just like, oh, hi, Kevin. How's it going?
Well, yeah, all because of one minor exchange online. I have a new fan in Texas who is actually waiting for me to get my physical copies of George Roman's Place Under Siege so I can send it one copy to him. Like, that is awesome.
That is great. And you never know, because you get fans all over the place. And I'm sure he's, like, spreading the gospel.
I hope so.
I don't see why not. Spread the gospel. So where are you at in your process now? So are you back to square one? Are you continuing the story? What are you at?
Okay, so when I finished up the first book, A Day at George Roman's Place,
right?
I, of course, already had concepts in my head of what to do. One, I wanted to explore Armand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's give the whole concept. George Roman's Place is an interdimensional hotel run by two gay master mage shape-shifting dragons.
Jesus. Okay.
So my influences were, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that does interdimensional, but they all kind of seem to me always limiting to human characters.
Right.
And I, going back to Kevin J. Anderson, one of the most impressive Star Wars expanded universe stuff I think they ever did was Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Yep, agreed.
That was just brilliant. It's like, okay, let's tell the story of all these different aliens, and they intersect.
Mm-hmm.
And the intersection is not as important as telling their stories.
Right.
And I remember how brilliant that was. It's like, okay, I want to do that with this interdimensional hotel. So generally the first half of the book is very much Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Okay.
You follow different characters through their activities in the hotel that have connections to the other characters and stuff and the bigger story that's going on. Then within that, I do a three-part flashback.
Okay.
Telling the early life of George and Armand.
Okay.
And then, of course, second half, everything's coming together and you have more of a standard novel format at that point where,
right,
you know, you have almost what you call chapters where the final story gets sold out.
Okay.
So that's the concept behind the books. So as I was finishing up the first one, one of the things I wanted to do was explore Armand's past a bit.
Okay. Which is only fair. I mean, the book is named after him.
Yeah. So that was the initial things for the second one was, okay, his family, what created him to be the way he is.
Right.
And then I came up with the title, actually. The title came before the storyline because you have a interdimensional hotel connected to hundreds of worlds with doorways to 1,000,000 worlds.
Wow. Okay.
And it's like a hotel. The doorways, you know, people just come and go, you know.
Yeah. It's interdimensional, of course.
How would that be under siege? How would you lay siege to something like that? It's like, okay.
Closed doors.
You're good, actually.
Boom.
But still, it's a bit more complicated than
right,
that.
Of course. It's never that simple.
Yeah. So, okay, so I love the title. It's like, okay, I have the title. I now have to explain how that works.
Right. How do you get there?
Yeah, and so that's what the book ended up being is, okay, what's going on? How are they under siege? Why are they under siege? You know,
okay.
What is all that about? And so I knew once more when I started the second one that I was going to release the third one because I wanted to explore Georgie a bit. And he gets a bit, he's explored a bit in the first book.
Right.
A bit more than Armand. And that's why I wanted to explore Armand in the second, but not enough. And so it's like, okay, if Armand's getting the second one, we're going to do a third one that will focus more on Georgie then.
Okay.
Just to be fair. And I knew I wanted to introduce Georgie's mom because Georgie's mom is going to be such an opposite character from him. And it'll have a lot of dramatic aspects to it. So while writing the second one, I'm fleshing out the ideas for the third one. And it was perfect because I can now that I know more of the universe, there are hints hidden in the second one that are connections to the storyline in the third one.
It's a little Easter eggs.
And so and that helped me branch out Armand's story and the hotel story and everything else a bit more by knowing where they're going in the third one.
Nice.
So going into the third one, I know the big reveals and stuff better than I have the other two. In fact, the first one, I did not really know the big reveal until I started getting to the point of writing it. I seriously did not know who the antagonist of the whole thing was going to end up being in the end.
Wow.
It was one of these things where it's like, you know, there's an antagonist. He's doing this stuff. Why? What's his motivation? And as I'm getting close, like, I have to figure out if this is really the character I'm hinting at or if it's a different character or how far off I want to go with who this is.
Well, and you hear that all the time from authors. They're all like, well, I don't know what this character is going to do. It depends on how they act or I've lost control of this character. And they're like, and I see people at these seminars or even at Mile High Con, they're scratching their head like, how do you lose control of a character?
It is so easy. I've done that so many, especially with the George R. R. Martin stuff.
Right.
Because I have such a diverse cast. And in the first book, I loved my conclusion. I did not know that was going to be the conclusion. I get to write it. I get to put in all these pieces together. I'm like, this is great. And just writing it was such a rush.
Right.
And even just, you know, I'm not the best on editing, but even going through and reading it again to edit it, I'm like, I really loved what I came up with here. I can't. And it was not planned out. It's one of these things where everything just seemed to flow together.
Yeah.
It's like, the connections were there. The parts were all, the pieces were all put in place by me subconsciously. And they just connected so perfectly.
Huh? I mean, a perfect storm. You can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
So you've gotten this far. Are you working on the next book? Or are you kind of trying to pace yourself?
I am a highly creative mind. If I am not being creative, I can be a jackass. I can be really hard to deal with.
You've always been nice to me, Ian. I cannot see you like an manipulative asshole. I'm sorry.
No, I wouldn't say manipulative. But if I'm not being creative, I have a much shorter fuse.
Oh.
I'm much more just, you know, antsy? I have it all kind of bottled up inside. So I have to be doing creative endeavors.
All right.
And I can do other stuff. You know, you talked about the costuming.
Yeah.
But, you know, that counts. Way back when, I had this really cool Halloween display every year where I do all sorts of custom pieces.
Oh, okay.
And I would just get the idea in my head. It's like, okay, I'm building this thing.
Okay.
And so as long as I'm being creative in some manner, I'm great. But if I don't do a creative outlet, it bottles up and I get frustrated and have all that going on.
You just fester.
So, yeah. So I do everything I can to make sure I'm doing something creative.
Okay.
And so right now in the follow-up of releasing the second George Armand novel, I am starting on the third one already.
Okay.
I've written the opening to it and I'm working on the first story in it, which once more. Now this is, okay, this is one of the fun things you get to do with writing. So in the very first novel, one of the first characters you're introduced to is Stefan.
Okay.
Stefan is supposed to be the average guy. He's supposed to more or less represent you coming into this wondrous world of George R. R. Martin's place and seeing it all.
Okay.
By the end of the book, he's gotten to accept it and all this stuff. Originally, there was supposed to be a scene where he goes into a world with dinosaurs and, like, really gets impressed by it. I couldn't quite fit that in.
Oh.
He does return in the second book, and in the second book, he's more of, oh, yeah, I've gotten this hotel down. I'm kind of living between two worlds, but, I've heard this whole hotel thing out. It's actually not, as stressful as it was. So in the third book, I decided he needs to have dinosaurs. So,
Course. So, it's interdimensional. You got dragons. Where the hell are the dinosaurs?
So he's riding dinosaur in a steam-powered paintball kind of competition.
Okay.
Just because, damn it, I can do that.
You can do that. Why not?
Yeah. So that's how his story opens up in the third one.
Wow.
Is he's participating in that.
Well, you definitely got a path going, that's for sure.
Yeah. And, there's interesting rules, stuff like George and Armand, they're both controlling and very lenient at the same time.
Okay.
The rules of the hotel generally say you can do whatever you want as long as, it's not hurting anyone else.
Right.
And obviously I don't explore that too much, but there's a lot of leeway with that. But at the same time, once more, you're not hurting anyone else.
No.
So there's actually magic in place so no one in the hotel can die.
Oh.
Which is actually a really great story about someone using that magic in the second book. Uh-huh. It's one of those stories.
Setup.
One of those stories that really surprised me. The character's name is Papa Flay. He's a crime lord, and he's been hiding out. He has not left the hotel in centuries.
Well, yeah, because he can't die.
Yeah, he's aging still. You can still age.
Right.
And so he's lived well past the limits of his species should be able to.
Right.
And he has one line that, when he was young, he was looking at the dragon saying, if they can live thousands of years, so can I.
Okay.
And so he's going to abuse that. So there's really great stories about the magic of not dying. Then violence. Okay. You cannot specifically attack someone. If you plan to attack someone, the moment you instigate the hostility, the magic in the hotel is going to stop you.
Wow, now, they need this for the Continental in the John Wick series.
Now, you can get away with a passing hit.
Right.
If you're pissed off and swing a hit, the magic isn't going to react properly to that because that's not planned.
Right. It's spur-of-the-moment reactionary type.
At least one hit and possibly two. But once the aggression starts, the magic will kick in.
Wow.
And then, of course, stuff like no slavery.
Okay.
And actually, one of the things the third book will explore is, once more, with no killing thing, even if you were to bring livestock in to kill it, to butcher it.
Right.
No, that's going to still be alive. So butchering has to be done outside of the hotel.
Wow.
That's actually going to...
So what about a crime of passion? Like, what if, like, totally,
you,
like...
You still couldn't kill someone. You could beat them up and injure them.
But you can't kill them.
Yeah, within, the first few things. Of
course, right.
Like I said, after a moment, the magic turned, this isn't peaceful, and kick in. and this is all stuff in my head, mostly. Stuff that can't be in the book. In fact, I picture if you were to go into the hotel with a disease... The viruses couldn't die, but they couldn't harm you anymore.
So you
basically have your viruses and your white blood cells is like playing cards because they have nothing to do.
Just at standstills. That's a great idea. I like that. That's a hell of a freaking concept.
So I'm trying to remember my point. I was getting on to some other. Oh, so one of the more interesting rules that came up through the first vacation story.
Yeah.
It was called George R. R. Martin Visit Cripple Creek. I want to do a weird Western with them just because. Taking George R. R. Martin and doing a weird Western with them, that's going to be something that's unique.
Right.
And so did Cripple Creek actually did some research, and in it they meet Pearl, who was a real madam in Cripple Creek. But anyways, in one of the opening scenes, they're riding horses in town. And Armand really is upset over this because the horse isn't sentient. And he's like, he doesn't like the idea of... labor animals.
Okay.
So one of the things within the hotel
Beast of burdens just piss him off, huh?
Right. You can have pets because you're taking care of them. They're slightly different. But if you have a beast of burden, it needs to be sentient. It needs to have agreed to being that.
Because without consent.
That's a big thing. It's one of these things that sound weird, but it's like...
It works.
Yeah.
Okay.
It makes sense. Because once more, they don't believe in slavery. Even slavery of non-sentient animals. No, right. Yeah, I'm not going to get into the whole, you know, butchering meat thing, because that goes to weird places. But it's so interesting, because I'm not even sure how much of the stuff I will ever put in the books, but I know these rules.
You've thought them through.
I know how it works.
Yes.
And, you know,
well, it's your universe. You better know.
Oh, no, that's one of the fun things about writing all this stuff, is realizing how much more I have to know that I'm putting in.
Right.
And like I said, I know the rules better. I know, if anyone were to come and question me, it's like I probably should right off the bat be able to tell you, okay, this is how it works there. It's not been the stories, but I know for a fact this is how it works.
Yes, yeah. You know the rules.
Yeah.
All right. I like it. So you've started the third book.
Right.
All right. So when it's done, I want to have you back.
Because I want
to hear how it goes.
Yeah. So, I'm working on the third book. I'm working on the seventh vacation story, which, so I was telling you earlier, I do a podcast called The Amateur Skeptics.
Correct.
I've been doing that for over 10 years now. We often talk about my writing project, especially since my friend Brian Heisner, who is the one who came up with us doing the podcast to begin with. He's also the one who came up with the initial concept of George R. Mann's Place.
Oh, okay.
Which in everything I do, you'll see, you know, George R. Mann's Place Under Siege by Ian Brazy Cannon, based on characters and concept by Brian.
Right.
I give him full credit for it in everything that's George R. Mann's Place. It
I don't
is
know
his
if I've
concept.
Met Brian.
Probably not.
Doesn't sound familiar.
He's actually in Texas now. He hasn't been out here for, I don't know, about six
ages.
Yeah. but so Brian, you know, came up with this concept for role playing.
Right.
And that's where I stole that from. But he's the one doing the podcast as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we talk about this stuff all the time on the podcast, especially when I have something new coming out. So we were talking about George R. Mann's Place Under Siege. We have one co-host who goes by the alias of Dumbass. Well, and the idea is he knows nothing. You know, we're a skeptic podcast. We kind of admit we don't know anything. So his alias is, I'm a dumbass. I know nothing. It works. But he was joking, saying, well, the third book's going to be called George and Armand in Space. I'm like, actually, that'd fit better for a vacation story. Hey, I need to write that.
There you go. There's your intro.
So, and then I'm somewhat working on the follow-up to Cost of Leveling Up, the young adult novel. We'll see. I have a basic – it's weird that I actually outlined that. Because with George R. Mann's
Place – that's kind of how the process worked, I thought, but okay.
George R. Mann's Place, I don't really outline as much. I come up with concepts and then go from there. But with Cost of Leveling Up, I did do an outline, even though I cut away from it a fair amount and you know, improv'd it.
Gave me some direction, though.
But so I did do a outline for a follow-up to Cost of Leveling Up.
Okay.
And I have somewhat started on that.
Cool. So we're coming close to the end of our time.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that hurts. how do the people need to stalk you, keep in touch with you? Where do they need to go to pick up some of your wonderful wares?
I am easy to find. Okay. So my last name, hyphenated name.
Yes.
There's only three people in the world right now that have that hyphenated name.
Really?
Yes. So you put that hyphenated name into a search engine, I will be the first one that pops up.
Wow.
So finding me online is about as easy as it gets. I have a Facebook page. I have a Facebook author's page. George R. Mann's Place has a Facebook page.
Okay.
I have an Amazon page. The Amateur.
Well, you got to sell the book somehow.
Yeah. you can go to amateurskeptics.com if you want to follow the podcast.
Okay.
Twitter handle is Dandelion Hunter, although I don't do too much with Twitter.
The twiddle?
That was a reference to my ex-wife's
sounds like Bloom
Twitter
County.
Handle.
Sounds like a rip-off Bloom County. I like that. Dandelion Hunter. I can just see it.
So yeah, I'm everywhere. Everything I have is available on Amazon. If you don't want to do Amazon and actually have a Nook, a lot of my stuff I have put on Barnes & Noble. I don't get much sales there, so it's not a market I overly push.
Yeah.
Amazon is the bigger market. But whatever you may think of Amazon, I understand the cringiness of it. It is a bigger market.
It's a bigger market, and it's a means to an end. I mean, how many billions of people can't be wrong? I mean, if they don't like it, then they'd stop using it.
Yeah. No. And then, of course, if you're local in the Denver area, I do, especially with the convention starting up again, I should be, you know, in 2018, I think I did about 10 conventions altogether.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Last year, I was able to do WhimsyCon right before everything closed down, so I got one convention in.
One in. Yeah, I got C2E2, and then that was.
And this year, like that, there's two definite planned. Hopefully, three, possibly more. You know.
All right.
So, yeah.
Well, we will keep an eye on the WhimsyCon dates. Is it the same team running that?
I'm sorry, I forgot your name. What's her name? Moved over to Europe.
Right.
And she was trying to help out, but she just couldn't. So she did step down fully. And
yeah, because she moved with her boyfriend, I believe.
Husband.
Yeah, husband, pardon me.
Yeah. And so Aaron Card took over running WhimsyCon.
Okay.
So I'm sure you've met Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to be running WhimsyCon this year. And like I said, everything's go. I have filled out the panelist forms for that. I've paid my down payment for my table.
So. All right. So it sounds like you're set.
WhimsyCon is a go. And like I said, Mile High Con, last night I filled out my panelist form for that. They emailed them out yesterday.
Oh.
So all the potential panelists should be getting those.
There you go.
So, yeah.
All right, Ian. Well, hopefully we will see you soon with the third book. I can't wait. I'm very intrigued about the Interdimensional Hotel. I like this. Cracks me up.
Oh, it's a fun concept.
It is a great concept. It really is. And even as you're like explaining it to me, I'm getting like envisions of like Matt Smith's Doctor Who, where they're in that one hotel, and it works very well. I like the concept a lot. It works great. Great. Well, that wraps it up.
Cool.
So thanks for coming in. Follow Ian on his website. We will put some links up on this post in the comments below or on the webpage for 5280 Geek. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe. Give us a share. Share Ian. Ian's a wonderful person. Share this man to the world. Don't keep him all to yourself. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.
Thank you for having me.
God bless.